Good morning, and welcome to a special Main Street Radio broadcast live from the central Minnesota town of Uppsala. I'm Rachel Reby. 10 years ago, when Main Street Radio started covering rural Minnesota, computers were just starting to appear in homes. Fax machines were technological wonders, and the World Wide Web was something out of a science fiction novel. Today, they're part of everyday life for many Minnesotans. Technology has changed the way we live, work, and learn, opening up possibilities we couldn't even imagine a decade ago. During our show today, we'll look at how rural Minnesota has changed since it plugged in and hooked up. We're coming to you this morning from the Uppsala Community Center on Main Street in Uppsala. They're putting the finishing touches on a hot lunch. I understand it's chicken, mixed vegetables, and ginger snaps today. It's served every day of the week to Uppsala senior citizens. About 35 people expected to come and eat lunch today on the other side of this room. Let me tell you a little bit about Uppsala. It's a small farming town of about 400 people. We're about a half hour northwest of St. Cloud here. It seems an unlikely place to lead Minnesota's technological revolution, but it was here in Uppsala 10 years ago that one of the first fiber optic networks in the country switched on, linking a trio of rural school districts by interactive television. In a few months, it will be the first place in the country where every home is connected with ISDN lines. Those are high-quality wires which make video conferencing an everyday possibility. Joining me at the Uppsala Community Center today is Dennis Kabinski. He is the manager of the Uppsala Phone Company, and Jane Leonard of the Minnesota Office of Technology, a state agency created to help connect Minnesota. Welcome to both of you this morning.
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 Dennis, let's find out, first of all, how this happened in Uppsala.
Well, what we were looking at here in Uppsala, we were one of the first leaders here with touchtone service, where we had private line service to every one of the homes with touchtone service. And we moved into the fiber optics, and as was mentioned, we're going into the ISDN service. And one of the things that we always looked at here is that we look at the metro area, where you have roughly about 500 access lines per square mile, and out here in the rural area, we only got five access lines per square mile. So what we did here is we just look at what's in the metro area versus the outskirts of the metro, like in the rural area, and we say, well, why can't we have it out here, and we'll just take that metro area and expand it out only to five access lines per mile and have the same type of service.
So you still build a house with Lego blocks, you just use less of them.
Yes.
Does that make it simpler to build?
Yes, it does. What we look at is with the fiber optic concept now coming in, we can expand our systems out a lot easier and give quality of service in ISDN or the high-speed data networks. What's happening in the industry that we're seeing right now is that the phone service is phones, but folks out here are looking for high-speed data networks, and that's why we want to go ISDN. That's a stepping stone.
Well, Dennis, was Uppsala clamoring for fiber optics? The rest of us had never heard those two words used together, but in Uppsala, were they saying, Dennis, get us fiber optics?
Yes, it was an opportunity here to, it was a cutting edge. Fiber optics came into existence, and we felt, why not give this a try? It's this cooperative with board members and the community. They've been always on a cutting edge. Let's try something new, see what we can have, and get this thing going. And fiber, when that came into existence, when we hooked up three schools for distant learning, and now hooked up 10 schools, one of the schools being a Native American school, also a community college, a state university, has made tremendous strides as far as distant learning into our community.
And so when people who wanted to see this very new cutting-edge technology in the late 80s, when they came to this country, and many of them came from other countries to take a look at it, they didn't go to New York City, they didn't go to Los Angeles, they didn't even go to the Twin Cities, they came directly to Uppsala to see what you had done here. Was that just an absolute high for the people in this community?
Yes, it was. It was very exciting to see people come from foreign countries, from all throughout the states, come down here and visit our site and look at that distant learning project.
Shop at Trustworthy Hardware across the street and get a burger at the cafe and then check it out in Uppsala.
Yes.
Jane, how unusual is this?
Well, I think If you look at it a per capita basis, it's highly unusual. Looking at 400 people, and I know that Dennis's trade area is a lot bigger than that, and I think that's kind of what they were looking at as well, is expanding beyond the confines of the city. I think there are other examples across the state, perhaps not as aggressive in getting the advanced technology so quickly and so early. But we see some of this activity in a town like Wheaton, which is west of here, actually close to the South Dakota border. And they did somewhat of the same thing, but not with quite the looking at the advanced technology. They wanted just to get internet access and did so by organizing a group of community members into actually aggregating their demand so that they could attract a provider, and they did it through their electric co-op. So I think you see innovation across the state, but it's by individual communities at this point.
So it just takes a person to get some other people going, and some remarkable things can happen in the most unlikely places.
I think that's right. I think you hit it on the head. It's really about leadership. It's not so much about the technology. It's more about getting the right people in the right place at the right time, and having that risk-taking. And I think that Uppsala's taken a lot of risks here, but it may pay off in the future.
Dennis, I know I'm asking you this question in front of a room full of what must be your friends and family members from Uppsala, but did they think you were nuts here?
No, I don't think so. It's pretty much that they were looking at the leadership, and my guidance came quite a bit from the board of directors. You know, our cooperative goes back to 1907, and with the guidance of the directors that we had on the board of directors, they gave the guidance, let's go ahead with new technology, and I believed in technology. I always enjoyed new stuff.
Was it a huge risk?
It was a very huge risk.
What would have happened if this hadn't panned out? Would you like have been run out of town on a rail and we'd have no phone service in Uppsala? I mean, was it possible that you could bankrupt the entire phone cooperative?
Yes, there was that big risk that would happen. Taking the fiber optics, there was a considerable amount of money that was put into it for the distant learning, and I guess probably if that would have not turned out, I wouldn't be here today.
Dennis, a man on the edge. Jane, how much of Minnesota is hooked up?
Well, if you're talking about local internet access, which a lot of people sort of use as the benchmark these days, it's about 85% of the population. And remember then that the population, about half or actually more than half, reside in the metro area. So there's still pockets out there that don't have local internet access. Many pockets that don't have ISDN. But as a whole, the state, I think, is well hooked up in terms of just regular phone service or plain old telephone service, POTS as it's called. And we're doing well in that area. It's just trying to move up into the more advanced technologies.
And when we hear statistics like 85% of Minnesotans can get internet access, then we have to think to ourselves, the Twin Cities, which is home to half of them, 2 million Minnesotans, they all have local access. So what it means is the other 35% is spread out among the rest of us that live in rural Minnesota.
Right,
so,
and that's a lot of territory. So you know that there are some places in the countryside that don't have the local internet access. And that's, I think, a first step really in getting on the information highway is just seeing what internet is. And we did do projects a couple years ago to try to get local internet access public sites up through the Access Minnesota project, and I think that did a world of good to just help introduce the concept to people who hadn't seen it, and that spurred a lot of the creation of the local internet access.
We are coming to you live from the Community Center on Main Street in Uppsala, Minnesota. We're going to open our phone lines because we're quite interested in what you as listeners have to add to this conversation. What's going on in your town? What would you like to be going on in your town? Or are you quite content to sit on the sidelines and watch the superhighway rush past your window? You can call us this morning. Our phone numbers, any place you can hear my voice, you can call us at 1-800-537-5252. If you're in the Twin Cities, call us at 227-6000. The numbers again, outstate, 1-800-537-5252. In the Twin Cities, 227-6000. We're going now to a place in Minnesota that has not been as fortunate as Uppsala, way up almost to the Canadian border in Little Fork. Little Fork is a community about 20 miles southwest of International Falls. They have yet to get local internet access. We have Mike Fairchild on the phone with us. Mike is a native of Little Fork. He now serves on the city council, and he's also editor of the local newspaper. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Rachel. Good morning, Rachel. It's my pleasure.
Mike, when did you start wanting internet access?
I think you're looking at about a year and a half ago is probably when this all came to the forefront. It seemed like everything else was buzzing around, and you hear about it constantly, you know, network television and radio. You know, nothing was happening here in Little Fork, and I guess it came into International Falls about that time also. Being that we're so close to International Falls, I guess that sort of spurred interest, too.
And so you started hearing about it, and did you just think, well, eventually it's going to get to Little Fork because it came to International Falls on Monday. Maybe we'll have it hooked up on Friday. When was the first sign that it was not going to be that easy?
I think after it had been in International Falls for 6 months, I guess we kind of realized that it wasn't going to happen here without some phone calls. So I had called, and a few other Little Fork residents had called like our phone carrier, GTE, and the provider in International Falls. And at first, the provider in International Falls, showed some interest. But I think they're in some financial difficulties. I think they started pulling out of some other small rural areas. And I guess that's probably what's cost us a year and a half, is we've gotten tangled up with two prospective internet providers and really have gotten, you know, has borne no fruit for us. And that just brings us to where we are today, sitting here with no internet access.
Are they concerned, Mike, that you were the only person in Little Fork interested in internet, or had you been able to demonstrate widespread support? We should mention that Little Fork is actually over twice as big as Upsala. You have 918 people up there. Mm-hmm. Did more people than you wanted?
Right. There were quite a few people that came in. And I would estimate right now that there's probably only 3-4% of the people here actively doing it. But again, you know, that's a little misleading because nobody wants to pay the exorbitant phone bills that go along with that. I think it's like if we had the access, you know, you'd look at probably an area like this at least supporting 100 to 120 internet users.
Jane, what do you tell a guy like Mike Fairchild? He wants it, they're ready for it, he has people who will get it, and they can't find a provider. Now, you said one of the missions of your office is to get Minnesota hooked up. How do you help a place like Little Fork?
Well, there's a couple of ways, and number one, just to sort of think through that situation and compare it to Upsala. Upsala has a local telephone company that lives here. Little Fork has a local telephone company that doesn't live in Little Fork. And so I think there was a compelling desire by the local folks here to do some work in Upsala as opposed to Little Fork, where you've got to try to get the corporate machine to recognize that there is a demand. And one of the things that we're trying to do through our office is create a community technology resource center. It's called the Minnesota Internet Center. And in fact, our assistant director is sitting here in the audience today. And we're going to try to work with towns like Little Fork to help them aggregate the demand. As our guest talked about, it's difficult sometimes to demonstrate that the demand is there. I think another key point here is you've got to do some market education. You've got to help not only educate the providers that, yes, indeed, there is a market here, but you've got to educate your users to help demonstrate then again that there will be some revenue and that the prices can be reasonable. But that takes a little while to do, and I think the problem that Little Fork may be facing is that International Falls had just that much more demand demonstrated because it is a larger community. And the other point that I think needs to be brought out is there are, how many, Dennis, 91 local phone companies in Minnesota, as opposed to, say, some states that just have one or a few. So we're dealing with borders, local exchange borders that sometimes make it difficult for an internet provider to cross over and provide affordably that service.
Mike, why do you want internet? What do you think, is it for you personally, or is it, what's it going to do for your community? Do you feel like everybody else is at the party and nobody invited you, and even if they had, they wouldn't let you in the door?
I would say that's a very good description. Last night I stopped by the local VFW. I sat down and wasn't 5 minutes, somebody sat down to me and said, Mike, when are we going to get this internet access? And I said, I don't know. I said, it's a problem. He said, I would love to be taking some classes with the University of Minnesota and doing some things that way. And he just can't do it. He was frustrated just like I am.
So you just keep working and hope it's going to happen. Thanks for joining us from Little Fork today, Mike. We hope you get hooked up soon.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Jane, how long before all of Minnesota is going to be hooked up? If you were just to give a guess, is it going to be another 6 months, another year? Could it be years?
Well, it depends on what you mean by hooked up, because if you're talking about
internet access,
I think that you know, we could, and Dennis will probably know better than I since he's really in the industry here, is probably by the end of this century, we should all be hooked up in some fashion or other. That's, what, 3 years?
I don't know if that's going to be that comforting to Mike Fairchild.
Right.
I don't know. What do you guys think?
And I think in terms of the Mike Fairchild's dilemma, again, we're in kind of a rock and a hard place, because in those areas, we're down to the areas in Minnesota that are difficult to serve affordably. So demonstrate, again, both to the providers and to the customers that there are ways that this technology can be used to generate revenue for both the provider and for the user. One of the questions, we just had a statewide conference on telecommunications for rural and urban Minnesota 2 weeks ago in Alexandria, and one of the telephone providers stood up and said, you know, we've been offering internet access for quite some time now, but we're losing money on it. And it's sort of a loss leader, if you will, I guess. How do we form a partnership, as I think Upsala has done with their community, to make sure that when providers provide a service, that they are going to be able to affordably provide that, and that it is affordable to the user? So I guess it's not an easy answer, is what I'm trying to say.
We have Fred on the phone from Minneapolis. Go ahead with your question, sir.
Good morning. I live in the inner city of Minneapolis, but I grew up in a small town in Iowa, smaller than Upsala, actually. And I happen to know that in Iowa, the independent phone companies, that is the little, you know, co-ops and so on, have banded together and have a fiber network between them, and offer, they themselves are acting as access providers in the towns where, you know, they have members. And I'm curious, you referred just a moment ago to something that sounded like it might be similar here. I'm wondering if you could explain a little more what's in Minnesota, maybe critique of the INS, I believe, Iowa Network Services, I believe it is, in Iowa. And lastly, I'm curious, since I grew up in a small town, I still feel an affinity for the small town, and I'm wondering if anybody's building relationships between using networking between essentially individuals in cities and small towns. It seems to me that there's a potential there for some kind of relationship, and that could be productive for both.
For your question, let's address those. Jane?
Okay, I'll take the last one first, just so that you know that in terms of individuals hooking in, using all these tools, there are about, we estimated last year due to a survey we did, about 130 community networks that are using internet as a way to provide information about the community, either through a website or email or some kind of a application of internet, about 130 of those across the state. Now, that's just an estimate. There's probably more, and there's more adding every day. So in terms of individuals using this from individual to individual, I think that might explain some of that. The caller brought up the Iowa example, and Iowa decided a couple of years ago that the state was going to kind of take on the role of providing infrastructure in partnership with the private sector, but really being more sort of in the driver's seat than say here in Minnesota. And so a lot of the smaller towns in Iowa were hooked up by a fiber optic network, particularly for video conferencing for schools and hospitals. There's a similar kind of thing going on here in Minnesota, and I think some of your guests next hour will talk about that, the MinLink for libraries and the Learning Network of Minnesota for schools. And there's also a group here in Minnesota that sounds similar to what the caller talked about in Iowa called Minnesota Equal Access Network Services. It's a group of about 65 local independent phone companies that have banded together, first of all, just to get local, long-distance service about 10, 15 years ago, and now have moved into internet and video conferencing and other. And they have their own fiber backbone and do all that like the Iowa system. So.
Our phone number this morning, if you're interested in calling and joining our conversation, is 1-800-537-5252. In outstate Minnesota, if you live in the Twin Cities, call us at 227-6000. Again, the number is 1-800-537-5252 in the Twin Cities, 227-6000. It's 26 minutes past 11 o'clock. This is a special Main Street Radio broadcast coming to you live from Uppsala. And we have a room full of people here at the Uppsala Community Center, and they haven't even started eating lunch yet. One of the people sitting in the front row, his name is Amer Nilsson, and 30 years ago, he campaigned against updating the old hand crank phone system. Now, apparently, he sends email all over the country. Sir, you are 85 years old?
That's right.
30 years ago, were you one of the guys who was thinking, no, this is not going to work. There's no point.
Yes, that's right. At our annual meeting, I was the one that got up and rocked the boat a little.
And your main argument was what, sir?
Well, quite a few people felt that we weren't quite ready for it, and competition was coming in fast, and we had to make some move, and I was a little slow in jumping into this thing.
So you were a little more conservative than Dennis Kapinski.
Well, at that time, Dennis Kapinski wasn't the manager. We were just starting out from scratch. We really didn't have a manager at that time. It was just a hit and miss affair. But we had the old crank telephone and two employees, and we got along that way.
And Amer, would you say that you were dragged into the technological age? It was here, and finally you decided, oh, the heck with it. I'm going to plug in myself?
No, it's been interesting to see all these pieces come together as it has come in, and with a good management and the board working with the management, we've just accepted these pieces. When we see something new come in, hey, let's try this, and it's just worked out through the help of different contractors who have worked with us and the manufacturers of telephone equipment.
So now you're kind of proud to be on the cutting edge here in Uppsala.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Tell me how you use the computer in your life.
Well, the Internet is my biggest user of the computer. It was unfortunate for me that my daughter and son-in-law are traveling all over the world quite a bit. And they were based in Singapore for quite a while, and then they traveled over around the Middle East into Jordan and on up to England and all over the world. So how do I keep track with my daughter? Where is she? What is she doing? So with the Internet, they keep in contact wherever they were. I'd send it out on the Internet. The message would get to them wherever they were, and the message would follow them wherever they went. But, of course, being in Uppsala, I had not much to send out. No news from Uppsala, that's all the same. But the news coming in from all the other parts of the world where they were has always been, it's almost unbelievable how that.
People from different countries coming to see how you do it in Uppsala.
It was unbelievable. People coming from foreign countries coming to Uppsala to see what we were doing, and they were, where is that? Like some people in Minnesota, but in fact that. This is something we never even, in our wildest dreams, figured ever happened in Uppsala.
Thank you. We go now to Greg in St. Paul, who's on the line with a question. Go ahead, sir.
Hi, I was hoping. Hello?
Yes, go ahead, please.
I was hoping that you could explain a little more just what they're doing with the system. When I heard you talking about the program, I thought it was going to be a community that had lots of applications and so far, I just heard you say that they have a very good wiring system, and it seems that the only thing that they're going to do with it is the internet. Now, I imagine I know that there's a lot of power involved with that. But, of course, there's this phenomenon that's going on across the country where people buy very sophisticated computers and use them to, you know, basically just order from the Eagle catalog and things like that. But I was wondering, you talked a little bit about school linkages and things, and I was wondering, are the applications as sophisticated as the hardware? In other words, are there industries, information industries, and things that they hope to attract to the community?
Great. Let's ask Dennis to address that. Once you got hooked up, what were you hoping for, Dennis? Did you hope that major corporations from around the world would be like building skyscrapers here on Main Street, or what was the purpose of this besides being first?
Yes, what we were looking at is to attract some businesses that would come into our community, being a small community. And one of the things, as was mentioned here, we put in 130 miles of fiber optics tying the 10 communities together for distant learning, and that's two-way interactive TV system. And on this system, we just turned up recently here to every one of those communities a full T1 for access into the internet service. And we're hoping to take with the T1s, with the ISDN capabilities that we'll be turning on shortly, is to offer desktop video conferencing so that we can offer telecommuting type of a concept from our community. We can also go into telemedicine from our community and bring all these natures of things out here into a rural area that you would experience in a metro area.
So those are in the planning stages. Jane, is there a question sometimes that the plumbing's all there but nobody's using it?
I think that's a good point that we've sort of concentrated a lot on the plumbing, and now we're concentrating or starting to concentrate more on the applications, as the caller pointed out. And he made a good point, too, about, you know, what is going to go over this. And I think one of the things that probably Uppsala has had in mind is this whole area of electronic commerce. And one reason that people might want to think about this, especially if they're doing business with the government or with if they're a small supplier to a large corporation, perhaps, that a lot of the commerce is going to start to take place more and more on electronic transmission ways. And by the year 2000, in fact, all government electronic procurement, or all government procurement is going to be by electronic means. And so if you're a small business anywhere in the country and you want to be a part of that, you've got to have some sort of a transmission highway. So I think that this is a good preparation for that.
Our phone number here for this program, for you to call in and tell us what's happening in your rural town or your rural community, or how you are using perhaps technological advances in the way you live or quality of life. Why don't you give us a call this morning? Our number in rural Minnesota is 1-800-537-5252. If you're in the Twin Cities, you can call us at 227-6000. Again, the numbers 1-800-537-5252. In the Twin Cities, 227-6000. We'll continue our conversation from Uppsala right after this.
On the next All Things Considered, a new play about a young mother and a convicted sex offender.
I wanted to look at you and ask you about the kids. How old were they?
Mrs. Duncan, this is not a good idea.
Why did you need to do that?
The story finally became a story about powerlessness, which I feel is the endemic poison in American society today.
Leaves on the next All Things Considered. All Things Considered, weekdays at 3 on Minnesota Public Radio.
Coverage of rural issues is supported by the Blandin Foundation, committed to strengthening communities through grant making, leadership training, and convening. We invite you to visit the Main Street website. Go to www.mpr.org and click Main Street. You can access Main Street radio reports. You can also hear this program live on the internet. If you miss any part of the program, you can hear it anytime on the Main Street website. The address again, www.mpr.org. And don't forget to click on Main Street. Let's take a look at weather across the state of Minnesota. We're expecting a chance of showers today with temperatures ranging from the upper 60s in the northeast to near 80 in the south. Skies will clear off tonight, cool temperatures in the 40s and 50s. And tomorrow for Thursday, breezy and cooler, partly cloudy and in the 50s up north, mostly sunny skies in the south, with temperatures in the 60s. Right now in the Twin Cities, we have 73 degrees. We are continuing our Main Street Radio broadcast from the Uppsala Community Center. They are just setting the table for lunch. We're expecting about 35 senior citizens from Uppsala to come and have a hot lunch, which is served here every day of the week. The community center, though, is used for all sorts of things. It's not just a place to get meals. When I was talking to some of the people who work at the community center, they said that the Historical Society AA meets here. It's rented out for baby showers, family reunions. There are bake sales. The men's prayer breakfast meets here. So this is a busy place in Uppsala. Out the window on Main Street, we can see Trustworthy Hardware across the street, and we can also see the Uppsala Water Tower. For those of you who are wondering how you spell Uppsala, U-P-S-A-L-A. Call us this morning if you would like to. Our number's here, 1-800-537-5252. In the Twin Cities, it is 227-6000. And let's go to our next caller. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
This is Marty Galanter.
Yes, thank you for joining us this morning. Marty is, well, I'm going to have you tell us a little bit about you, Marty. I was hoping you could join us. You are a man who moved to rural Minnesota from New York City and managed to move your business with you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how that happened and why it happened?
Well, the why actually has to do with desire and planning. I had lived in rural America in the early 70s and always wanted to go back. So after quite a number of years in New York City, I started to plan how to take my business and my clients with me. And as technology improved, that's what gave me the opportunity. I am a writer. I do brochures and fundraising letters and speeches for CEOs and whatever words that corporate or nonprofit America needs. Very often I can supply. I've also branched out into the designing of web pages. And all of these items are quite compatible with current technology. When I first made the decision to come to Tyler, Minnesota, population 1,200, all I thought I needed was a fax machine. And as time went on, we used the computer hookups and the internet to transmit data, which is now to me a daily operation that goes 20, 30 times a day. In the old days, if you had to, the old days being 5 years ago, if you had to transfer material for rewrite, it was a process that could take days back and forth. Now, between email attachments, it can be done in minutes, which means I can live in Minnesota and earn my money in New York and Los Angeles and Chicago.
Do your clients know or care where you are, Marty?
My older clients do not. I started with them in New York City. My new clients are a little bit shocked every so often because there'll be a reference, and one of my clients will tell me, you know, call John Jones at such and such a company. He needs your services, and I'll make that call, and we'll be talking. And John Jones will say, well, what kind of time can you stop by my office? And then I explain to them where I am, and there is always this moment of hesitation. And I'm never sure whether the moment of hesitation is related to I'm not sure I want to deal with you, or why would anybody want to be there in the first place, because I usually get both of those from folks in the big city. But after a job or two, they calm down and realize that very often I can respond to them faster than someone who has to take a taxi across town.
Marty, when you first moved to Tyler, which is in southwestern Minnesota, it was not hooked up or plugged in, was it?
No, I was a little bit shocked, actually. This is probably a typical attitude of a city person, not realizing that the stuff you take for granted in major communities did not necessarily exist in rural America. When I arrived in Tyler, I found that our telephone switching system was state-of-the-art 1959, literally had been installed in 1959, and when you walked into the telephone building in Tyler's Main Street, you could hear it hum and click. It was something like it was out of an old movie. And this system was incapable of handling data transmission and was incapable of even supplying alternative long-distance company choices. It took about 2 years for General Telephone, our phone company, to catch up with the technology and install the digital system. And during that period of time, I had a bit of struggle.
But once you got those things turned around, they went to a digital switching system. Things are as up-to-date as you need them now in Tyler, or are you wishing that you had full ISDN lines there as well?
Well, for me, they're as up-to-date as I need them. I could see certain kinds of industry and certain kinds of businesses that could come to our community that would need even the more advanced technologies, but frankly, there's nobody lining up to do that, so we're not too concerned at the moment. Everything I need, I have local internet access, easy access, which is one of the nice things in the country, is you don't have the famous America Online busy signal situations, good telephone service and getting the best long-distance deals that are available to small businesses. I'm very comfortable. From a communications point of view, I could be anywhere right now.
And this is a quality of life issue for you, isn't it, Marty? I know you told me with some pride in your voice you were able to buy a house in Tyler, Minnesota for $35,000.
Well, that's right. I lived in a two-bedroom condominium in suburban New York. It was a nice life, but it cost me a lot of money and required me to work an awful lot more on the things that I don't enjoy in order to live. I wanted a garden. I wanted some more space. My children are grown, so there was no concern with schools or things of that sort. And my wife and I decided that we could do that. We bought a four-bedroom house in Tyler for $35,000. It's worth a little bit more than that now, but we still only pay $430-something in taxes on it. And that allows me to pick and choose what I want to do more from my desire than it is from the need to put a dollar in the bank.
Marty, thanks for sharing with us this morning. That's an interesting story. Our phone numbers this morning, 1-800-537-5252. I'm curious to know, callers, if you think your town should be spending money on this kind of thing, would you be interested if they decided to appropriate money to have a technological infrastructure in your town, just right along with the water service or the sewer service? If you're in the Twin Cities, you can call us at 227-6000. We'd also be delighted to hear from other people like Marty who have been able to live where they want and do what they want because of technology. Jane, how unusual is his story, or is rural Minnesota populated with Marty Gallanters?
Well, I think there are a lot of Marty Gallanters out there. I look at my own parents, in fact, who are going to be moving back here to Minnesota from Washington, D.C. next year and probably will use some of the services of Upsala Telephone Co-op. And they are used to having email and internet quickly, and now that will be available thanks to the kind of positive action on the part of progressive towns like this. I think that every town, again, it kind of goes back to the leadership. You've got to figure out what you need in your community, how far ahead you're going to think. And there are many options that a local community can pursue. You asked that question about, what are some of the strategies, and there are several, I think, that we can talk about, and we'll see what the callers come up with, maybe.
Dennis, are there people that you know in the Upsala area that are able to do business from here because of what has been hooked up here?
Yes, we do have some people here that are living around the lake shore, and they come down here from the summer. They're from Colorado. And they do their business right from our area. And it's because we provide ISDN service. We will provide ISDN, but we do provide internet service. And we increased ours up to 33.6 with the modems. All our customers have the capabilities of doing that. We are presently looking at increasing our internet to 56K. And then also when
the translation of that, listeners, is they can get it faster here, and yes, they're going to get it faster, yet they'll be able to transmit information.
And we'll be using ISDN switching with our internet service, so that'll give them faster, because more and more folks are looking for faster means of transmitting data.
Our phone number, 1-800-537-5252. I'm Rachel Reby, and this is a special Main Street Radio broadcast coming to you live from the Upsala Community Center. We have Margie from Cottage Grove on the phone with us now. Margie, go ahead with your call.
Okay. I keep hearing about the bandwidth problem, and I just wanted to know how y'all felt about that.
Do we have a bandwidth problem?
At the present time, there is a bandwidth with the ISDN. If we're looking at internet as a provider, most of the times when they go out to the community, you know, you get a T1 or you get additional T1s, higher bandwidth capabilities. But it's a matter of managing it, looking at the usage. If the usage, what we look at, the more people use it, we monitor very closely and we increase our bandwidth so that there is access for folks.
And Dennis, what she's talking about, I'm assuming, is how wide the bandwidth is how much can come back and forth. It's like the Twin Cities running out of phone numbers to go with their 612 area code. It's sort of the same thing with the bandwidth.
That's correct, yes. When we talk about like phone numbers, we have all the wireless folks that are coming in and using phone numbers, and a lot of folks are using two lines to their homes or additional lines. And that's becoming a problem. And I joke many times about how we should restructure our whole works in the state of Minnesota, probably be the first one in the state of Minnesota to get rid of our area codes, use like the state, I'll say like Alaska and Hawaii, just use a state code for a prefix, and then go to four numbers for the prefix and four numbers for the numbers, and you can do all kinds of different things. It increases 10 times the amount of numbers that a person can have, which would open doors for number portability that you can move throughout the whole state and have one number.
Unless you think this is too outlandish, remember, Dennis Gabinski is the one who thought fiber optics would work here in Upsala. We have John from Minneapolis on the phone. Go ahead with your question.
Yeah, my question is, does anyone know if the small town, say, Chamber of Commerce are ever going to be hooked up to the internet in such a degree that people in the big cities like Minneapolis, St. Paul can actually investigate and talk to people of the community to find out things about it in case they might want to relocate to them?
That's a good question. Jane, how would you address that?
Well, I think that's really already happening. It depends on what you mean by talk. I think that there are a lot of websites up already that chambers and community sponsor that will give you lots of information about a community. And if you wanted to then talk to somebody more specifically, you can get that kind of contact information. But I would, you know, check some of the online listings of communities. And if you're interested in a particular community, put it in a search engine and see what happens.
We are listening to a special broadcast on technology in rural Minnesota. Call us this morning. 1-800-537-5252. Greg from North Dakota, you're on the phone with us. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I grew up in a small town in central Minnesota as well, and I was listening to your program, and it seems like there's a lot, almost to the imagination, of what you could be doing with a lot of the ISDN lines. You've talked about increasing them just to 56, but I'm wondering if there's even higher ISDN lines that could be beneficial to small towns, like doctors that may wish to relocate to small towns because they may be able to do a lot of the telemedicine things that are going on, and there's a big push for rural telemedicine right now. The other side of it is the small town that I'm from, I had a local phone company, believe it or not, and hooking up ISDN lines like this would also allow for a lot of local phone service systems in small towns that can be very beneficial to small town users. And I'm wondering if there's any push right now that if you're working on technologic advancements in order to be used for telemedicine and also for the other types of telecommunication besides internet.
Nothing done anyplace, Jane, in Minnesota?
Yes, actually it is, and it's one of the areas that the Office of Technology is trying to provide more leadership in. There are several examples right out here in the western, well, more west of here, the Healthcare Alliance, which is a group of about 8 hospitals that did put in a telemedicine network and are working to provide both diagnostic abilities with that as well as administrative. The Mayo Clinic is another one that's obviously been using this for a long time through satellite technology. Up in the Iron Range, the Hibbing area is doing partnerships with the University of Minnesota. So we've got, again, examples of this, and it's going to be a growing area of interest, definitely.
Mark from Worthington is on the phone. Go ahead with your question, sir.
Well, my question was, one,
what is ISDN? I'm somewhat computer literate, but I'm confused about what ISDN means and what it is. And just a comment, in Worthington, we have three internet providers available for consumers for a town of about 10,000, so I feel we're fortunate to have that option available. And it was neat to hear Marty Galanter on the phone because I happen to be an acquaintance of his, and it was exciting to hear how Marty has used the internet. But please explain for some of us technical neophytes what ISDN is and means.
Mark, they call us techno peasants, but we'll turn that one over to Dennis. What do, in your simplest way, Dennis, ISDN lines?
It stands for Integrated Services Digital Network, and basically it's moving at speeds of 128 kilobits per second.
And I think it means that you can do multiple things at once, yes, on a single line.
Yes, it it also gives you the capabilities, if you have ISDN into your home, six phone lines that you have. It's completely flexible how you want to use that bandwidth.
So Amer, who was happy with his hand crank phone and now sends email to his daughter in Singapore, soon can send his picture to his daughter in Singapore if they're as up-to-date as we are in Uppsala, and she can send it back so they can actually have a two-way, almost face-to-face conversation.
That's correct, yes.
We have Glenda on the phone with us now from the car. Glenda, go ahead with your question.
Well, I don't have a question. I had a comment about how I use the Internet.
All right, go ahead. How do you use it?
I'm a new resident in Jackson, Minnesota. It's right on the Iowa border. I'm a graduate student at the University of Tennessee, and I do my searches for research at the University of Minnesota, and I'm lost now in Minnesota trying to find the place because I've come up to do some searches here that would take me a lot longer if I had to do all that catalog search after I got here. So it cuts my research downtime considerably at the library.
And Glenda, just give us a for instance, because people might have a hard time. You're talking about library and searches and research papers. Give me a for instance. What were you looking for and how did you find it?
Well, I came to the university a month or so ago and joined the university library as friends of the library, which gives me library privileges to check out books, as well as gives me access by the internet to the card catalog. And sometimes this takes for hours to go through and find exactly what kind of block in traffic here. I've got to move. That way I can go through and find exactly the books that I need and copy down different catalog numbers and find out whether or not they're on the shelf or whether they've been checked out. I can do all that at home rather than come up here and spend 2 or 3 days in a motel while I go back and forth to do that. And I have all my cards filled out before I come about which books I want to see, if I can check out, or to see if there are things that I need. Then I can check those books out and go back home and read them and not have to spend that time here. Then I can communicate with my major professor back in Knoxville, Tennessee, and keep my project going that way.
So it's made your life easier, Glenda.
Oh, yeah, I don't have to be away. I'm a newlywed, 51 years old, and I don't have to be away from my husband who moved here to take a job in Jackson with AgChem. And so I was able to come with him rather than stay at the University of Tennessee and finish my dissertation there.
Glenda, thanks so much for your call this morning. We have Kevin now on the phone with us from Duluth. Kevin, go ahead with your question, please.
Hi. Well, I didn't have a question. I had a comment concerning the writer that moved here from, I think he said, New York.
Right.
The thing I wanted to point out is that now living here, what was the town he moved to?
Tyler.
Okay, so the businesses from Tyler now, they're making money in a roundabout way from this guy who used to spend all his money probably in New York, but now that he's living here, he's probably spending $20,000 or $30,000 a year in Tyler. So the point I was going to make was that whenever money has to be spent, somebody is always opposed to it, but they could look at it as an investment because if they invested in this, their community could reap the benefits of other people moving from big cities to their community and spending lots of money.
Good point, Jane. Have we seen communities that recognize that? Are some an easier sell than others? Are some willing to jump out on the limb like Upsala and think, well, if we build it, they will come? Or other communities like, I want to see it. I want to know it. I just read an article in the Ely Echo that said the city council was meeting and saying, we have to get this here or nothing more will ever happen in this town. How much of that is smoke and mirrors and how much of that is reality?
Well, I think there may be a little of both, but I do think that more and more people are recognizing the economic development opportunity and the necessity that this is now another infrastructure right alongside sewer, water, highways. You've got to have this kind of infrastructure if you do want to have some opportunity in your community to diversify your economy, as was pointed out in Tyler. Now this person in Tyler is contributing to that economy, paying taxes, and they've diversified what might have been purely an agricultural community.
Has the legislature directed you to start showing on paper or on screen how much money these towns are making, how much we've improved the economy of Minnesota, or are they content to say, whew, go out and oversee this $200 million of projects and let's hope, let's assume it's reasonable to think some money would come back?
I think always the legislature wants to see some accountability, and that's what we will be trying to provide. One of the ways that we're going to try to do that is through this Internet Center, trying to do some actual research on what difference is this making. That's one of the reasons why we wanted to partner with the St. Cloud State University and Minnesota Technology as part of this effort, so that we can try to demonstrate that, yes, indeed, there is a difference, and maybe we'll see that there isn't that much of a difference, but it's enough of a difference to make it worthwhile to make those investments.
Dennis, do you know what kind of financial benefit Upsala has reaped? I'm sure the cafe has done a brisker business with these foreign delegations coming in, but have companies moved here? Have people relocated to Upsala because of your technology?
Well, what we're seeing is out of St. Cloud that there's some expansion out here, and what we're looking for is quite a bit to offer high-speed data networks so that we can get folks that move out here and do a lot of telecommuting. And we've seen some of the things happening because this is one of our biggest years for our growth, building new homes and hooking up phone lines.
And so you're content just to wait and watch and see that it happens?
Yes.
I have to ask you one question quick. Is it more expensive to get phone service in Upsala because of all the bells and whistles you've added?
No, actually ours is, our private line phone service right now is, we're running it at $8 a month special for businesses and residential. So whoever wants to come down here as a business, we'll give them a good buy.
So Marty Gallanter got a good cheap house in Tyler, but you could get really good cheap telephone service, especially this month in Upsala.
That's right, yes.
And any closing comments, Jane?
Well, I think that Upsala is a great example of Minnesota's spirit, really, that, you know, we are this cooperative state, and that in many cases that's what it takes to make this happen in towns is a cooperative effort among providers like Upsala Telephone Co-op and the citizens in the community that recognize that they do want to be ahead of the game, so to speak, even though some of those risks are unknown at this point.
We want to thank our guests for joining us today, Dennis Kabinski and Jane Leonard. This special Main Street Radio broadcast continues next hour as we look at how technology is changing the way we teach our children. Can people learn anything anymore without computers? Or do we measure the worth of an educational institution today by its monitors and modems?